things and to like those shits I do not know. All she wants is gold, the silver. All she wants is ice cream.
You're listening to a young girl skipping rope. Poetry and Sound from New York 19 on this afternoon's edition of Anthology. Fleetwood, Sunday, March 28th. WNBC, in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA, 92nd Street and Lexington Avenue in Manhattan, brings you Anthology, a selection of readings from poets past and present, and the music to accompany their poetry. Our guests this afternoon, Tony Schwartz and William Carlos Williams. There's citywide cooperation these days in the welcoming of spring, the only uncooperative factor being the weather, as usual. Just a casual stroll along Fifth Avenue will reveal some of the attractive harbingers of this very pleasant season. Store windows awash with gay, colorful bonnets for m'lady. The smart convertibles with their tops down, dancing through traffic. Young tulips with their heads up in the flower boxes at Radio City. A boy and girl turning into the park. For them, spring holds a very special magic. Concerning that magic, a few words of wisdom from A.E. Housman, a poem called When I Was 1 and 20. When I was 1 and 20, I heard a wise man say, "Give crowns and pounds and guineas, but not your heart away. Give pearls away and rubies, but keep your fancy free." But I was 1 and 20, no use to talk to me. When I was 1 and 20, I heard him say again, "The heart out of the bosom was never given in vain. 'Tis paid with sighs aplenty and sold for endless rue." And I am 2 and 20, and oh, 'tis true, 'tis true. Harbingers of spring, an old woman sitting in the sun on the steps of a brownstone, circus posters and gabardine suits, a perky poodle barks at the flowerman's horse, a child skipping rope on a quiet side street.
And the mountain stands to light, oh shit, I do not know. All she wants is gold, the silver, all she wants is ice cream. So jump in my car, please, so jump out my big gate. You have to come out.
We'd like you to meet the young man who captured on records all the natural charm and spirit of that young girl and many, many other audible sights and sounds of the city. His name, Tony Schwartz. Tony, maybe we'd better fill in a few facts concerning yourself before we talk about poetry and sound. You're a commercial artist by trade, aren't you?
That's right. I work as a freelance commercial artist.
And as a commercial artist, how did you get started in recording?
Well, I was leaving the office I worked in down on 44th Street one day, and I passed a record store that had a magnetic recorder in the window when they first came out, and I went in, listened to it, and bought it.
You liked the looks first and then the sound, huh? Well, where did you get the idea for your first album, which I believe is called 1, 2, 3 and a Zing, Zing, Zing?
Well, this was actually about 7 or 8 years ago that I bought the recorder, and I found myself getting interested in folk music, and I started exchanging tape, wire, and disc recordings with people all over the world. I collected about 10,000 songs that way and felt that I should really get to know my own neighborhood if I was asking other people to exchange with me. And I took the postal zone I lived in, which was New York 19, and in working on that project of recording the folklore of my neighborhood, I spent a lot of time on the children's games. Mm-hmm. And here's a one of the items on New York, on Zing Zing Zing, which is a little girl bouncing ball.
I'm a little pale girl dressed in blue, here on the borders that I must do. Salute to the captain, bow to the queen, and turn my back to the submarine.
Well, this actually came out of New York 19, the project I was working on. And in this new record that I have coming out called New York 19, I found that much of the folklore fell into the realm of poetry. And the classical definition of poetry is that poetry is the art of rhythmical composition, written or spoken. And I felt that much of the material on the record falls in this realm. For instance, the art of selling produces a lot of natural poetry. And this section I have here has a theater barker, a nightclub barker, a theater program seller, some newspaper vendors, a flower vendor that came by with a horse and wagon, an auctioneer. And actually, while I was recording the auctioneer, he was a little slow in getting started, and the wind on my portable equipment ran out. And I had to walk out, and when I came back in, you can notice him saying he doesn't want me to go out, and am I sure my car isn't double parked, and so forth. He said, plus when I went out, I took six people with me. And then there's an insurance salesman and a gadget salesman, a guy who is selling a little gadget that sharpens knives and a glass cutter, and then ending with a pen salesman.
No waiting, gents. The first show is on. There's no waiting. Presenting Lloyd's Defeat. There's no cover in the middle at the bar. That's right. You can buy a drink at the bar and see the complete show. 90 minutes of entertainment. Presenting Lloyd's Defeat, an all-girl show. That's right. No waiting. It's on now. In fact, it's the only show on the block for the next 75 minutes.
By the noted artist, Ben Sean. Ben Sean's souvenir program of the world of Charlemagne. Containing a complete program of the show. Production notes, pictures and background of the cast, a full commentary on the entire performance, and 20 original drawings.
Tickets, please. All to your right, please.
Sunday, $5, I'm serving an American newspaper. Sunday, $5.
But we're going to get started with some of the household merchandise. There's the toaster that sells for $24.95. We'll take a dollar here. And then there's the little traveling alarm clock with a jeweled movement for luminous hands and dial, a dollar for that one. And, of course, we have the cameras, expensive cameras, going into the bidding. This one here is very simple to operate, and we'll take a low offer for that one. And, of course, there's carving sets and steak knives. Now, just let me talk. Let me do the talking from now on. You're not going to run in and out, are you? All right, say right. You're not double-popped, any chance? All right. Okay, because when you went out, you took six people with you before. I've got to get an audience. Here we have a little iron. This happens to be a traveler. In fact, it's called a little traveler. And the cord sells for about a dollar and a quarter. Now, as soon as we get a little audience, folks, I'll come back for the second bid. One bid, don't buy. It takes two bids or more to constitute a sale.
Look, mister, why give me 50 cents a week? It's 52 cents a week. I can give you the same policy if you buy it by the month for $2. you're going to give me $2.08 a month when I can get you the same policy for $2. You pay me by the month anyway, weekly policies.
You draw it up off that wheel, first on one side. You turn the blade around. That'll put your scissors as smooth and sharp that day left the factory. And a glass cutter, watch me cut the glass. Now, you don't have to be afraid of glass, ladies and gentlemen, just because it is glass. You see, you slide a door, close a window, accidentally you break a piece of glass. That'll cut 1,600 yards of glass. If that glass was broke, and you want to straighten that piece of glass out, just mark it as all you do. We sell them, and we sell them cheap. It cuts glass like a machine, double thickness. Well, here's a piece of plate glass, ladies and gentlemen, like mirrors and shells of home. Now, this little instrument, folks, is sold on television. There it is, on the box. It's marked for a dollar and sold for a dollar. We're not going to charge you a dollar, not 75, not 50 cents. We cut the price low. 35 cents is all you spend.
Number two is a fine line. Now, here is a pen that hasn't got the feature of a number on it, but it gives you any sort of line without changing the point. Now, if you understand, realize, and appreciate a real good value, and if my physiognomy is not too conspicuous to be comprehended, I'm going to clarify to such an extent that each and every individual standing here at the present time can very well afford it. I'm going to give it this park of 51 type. Now, don't forget, you can take my pen and bring it into any pawn shop. Ask him for $10, see how quick they'll chase you out. But you ask him for $5, they may give it to you. Look, and today I'm not going to charge you no dollar bills for the pen, but the first lady or gentleman gives me 25 cents gets the pen. And I think it's worth a quarter to anybody. Anyone who understands and realizes and appreciates something real good, you can go downtown, uptown, out of town, into time, in the summertime, in the wintertime, gets a sugar line. All the way through, you never get a pen like this. By golly, that was a heavy quarter. Thank you. Everybody gets the same chance. Here's another one like the last one. Look, not to discriminate, to make fish of one and flesh of another, believe you me, as long as you live, and may you live as long as you wish, and don't forget all the money that you spend with me goes to a good cause. Because my wife wants money, the butcher, the baker, everybody wants money. Look at this. You can write Yiddish, you can write English, you can print, you can sketch with this very same pen. Can you show me another pen? Regardless how much you may spend for it, we'll give you this service and satisfaction.
Poetry and Sound by Tony Schwartz. His newest album, New York 19, is available now at all record counters. In the current issue of Q, there's a radio column headed Brief Notes. Well, Q may be short on notes, but they're very long on compliments, and we of Anthology are most grateful. News of next week. An excursion into the realm of the theater. Our guest will be Norman Rose, currently on Broadway in the fifth season, but also a promising young American poet. And on disc, Judith Anderson in a scene from Medea. Delighted to have as our second guest this afternoon the distinguished author and poet, Dr. William Carlos Williams. Dr. Williams plies his medical trade in his hometown of Rutherford, New Jersey. His literary trade, however, is not only nationwide, but worldwide. This week, Random House will release his newest collection of poems entitled The Desert Music and Other Poems. Dr. Williams, we're very happy that you took the trouble to journey in from Rutherford to visit us this afternoon. Welcome to Anthology.
Thank you.
You know, we've been wanting to meet you for quite some time, and luckily for us, your new book has just come out, which gave us a good excuse. But I'd like to ask you something before we get into talking about your book and perhaps asking you to read some of the poetry. There was an article in the New York Times, 2 weeks ago maybe, I'm sure you read it, in which Lord Dunsany was quoted as saying that the role of the poet should be that of a prophet, that the poet should give us guideposts to the future. And he feels that today's poets are failing us and that this is all the worse because we are living in such a chaotic age. And he feels that the poet should be bringing us out of this chaos, but instead, what is he doing? He is just bringing more chaos upon chaos.
Well, it's obvious that Lord Dunsany doesn't understand what he's reading. He's... His, it's... The writing nowadays is very much more complex than when he was an active poet. And the ideas are more complex, too, and the world is more complex. But it's... Besides, for myself, he's an Englishman who does not speak the same language that I do at all. And I can't ask him to adapt himself to the language which I speak. Nevertheless, it is very, very obvious to me that writers in the past, who were supposed to be intelligible, when they were most didactic, they were least poets. Poems have always been difficult to understand, because they're imaginative, and they speak a language, not the language of every day, but a symbolic language that is many times means exactly the opposite from what is stated. It is clear. It is clear if you get used to the language, but it is more for the pleasure, the sensory pleasure of reading the language which poems first come to us.
In other words, you think that the word chaos is the wrong word there, that what he's thinking of is complexity rather than chaos.
Unless you're speaking of some very, very modern poems from the young who attempt to present a world which is chaotic, and therefore they perfectly clearly want to give the impression of chaos itself when they were writing. And that is not a bad idea in a poet.
Well, your new book, Dr. Williams, which just came out on Thursday, The Desert Music and Other Poems, this is what? How many other books have you had prior to this?
Well, I've never counted them, but the list inside the cover says that there are more than 20 books. Not all poems, not all books of poetry, but at least 20 books. That's not too much for 45 years of writing.
Well, I think it's quite a record when you consider, too, that those 45 years have been filled with practicing medicine.
Yes, and filled, too.
Well, Dr. Williams, I'd like, if you would be so kind, as to read some of your poems for us this afternoon from this new selection.
I'll be very glad to attempt to.
Well, I'm just going to turn the microphone over to you now, and you just read on, will you?
Well, thank you.
And we'll listen.
All right. I'll do the best I can. I'm, at the present time, not in a position to read easily. The first of them is the first one in the collection. The Descent. The descent beckons as the ascent beckoned. Memory is a kind of accomplishment, a sort of renewal, even an initiation, since the space that opens are new places inhabited by hordes of new, heretofore unrealized, of new kinds, since their movements are toward new objectives, even though formerly they were abandoned. No defeat is made up entirely a defeat, since the world it opens is always a new place, formerly unsuspected. A world lost, a world unsuspected, beckons to new places, and no whiteness lost is so white as the memory of whiteness. With evening, love wakens, though its shadows, which are alive by reason of the sun shining, grow sleepy now and drop away from desire. Love without shadows, begins to awaken as night advances. The descent, made up of despairs and without accomplishment, realizes a new awakening, which is a reversal of despair. For what we cannot accomplish, what is denied to love, what we have lost in the anticipation, a descent follows, endless and indestructible. The second poem is The Host. According to their needs, this tall Negro evangelist at a table separate from the rest of his party, these two young Irish nuns, to be described subsequently, and this white-haired Anglican have come witlessly to partake of the host laid for them and for me by the tired waitresses. It is all, since eat we must, made sacred by our common need. The evangelist's assistants are most open in their praise, though covered, as would be seemly in such a public place. The nuns are all black, a side view. The cleric, his head bowed to reveal his unruly poll, dines alone. My eyes are restless. The evangelists eat well, fried oysters and whatnot, at this railway restaurant. The sisters are soon satisfied, one on leaving, looking straight before her under steadfast brows, reveals blue eyes. I myself have brown eyes and a milder mouth. There is nothing to eat. Seek it where you will, but the body of the Lord. The blessed plants and the sea yielded to the imagination intact, and by that force it becomes real. Bitterly to the poor animals who suffer and die that we may live. The well-fed evangels, the narrow-lipped and bright-eyed nuns, the tall white-haired Anglican, proclaim it by their appetites, as do I also, chomping with my worn-out teeth. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. No matter how well they are fed, how daintily they put the food to their lips, it is all according to the imagination. Only the imagination is real. They have proclaimed it. They have imagined it. Therefore, it is so. Of the well-fed, of the evangels with the long legs characteristic of the race, the docile women of the party smiled at me when, with my eyes, I accosted them. The nuns, but after all, I saw only a face, a young face cut off at the brows. It is a simple story. The cleric, plainly from a good school, interested me more. A man with whom I might carry on a conversation. No one was there save only for the food, which I alone, being a poet, could have given them. But I had only my eyes with which to speak. The last one I'll read. Perhaps I'll do better than I did on the other. The Orchestra. The precise counterpart of a cacophony of bird calls, lifting the sun almighty into his sphere, woodwinds, clarinet, and violins sound a prolonged ah. Ah, the sun is about to rise and shed his beams as he has always done upon us all, drudges and those who live at ease, women and men, upon the old, upon children and the sick who are about to die, and are indeed dead in their beds, to whom his light is forever lost. The cello raises his bass note manfully in the treble din. Ah, ah, and ah, together, unattuned, seeking a common tone. Love is that common tone, shall raise his fiery head and sound his note. The purpose of an orchestra is to organize those sounds and hold them to an assembled order, in spite of the wrong note. Well, shall we think or listen? Is there a sound addressed not wholly to the ear? We have closed our eyes. We do not hear it through our eyes. It is not a flute note either. It is the relation of a flute note to a drum. I am wide awake. The mind is listening. The ear is alerted. But the ear, in a half-reluctant mood, stretches and yawns. So the bank violins in three tiers enliven the scene pizzicato for a short memory. And to make the listener listen, the theme is repeated, stressing a variant. It is a principle of music to repeat the theme, repeat and repeat again as the pace mounts. The theme is difficult, but no more difficult than the facts to be resolved. Repeat and repeat the theme and all it develops to be, till thought is dissolved in tears. Our dreams have been assaulted by a memory that will not sleep. The French horns interpose their voices. I love you. My heart is innocent, and this the first day of the world. Say to them, man has survived hitherto because he was too ignorant to know how to realize his wishes. Now that he can realize them, he must either change them or perish. Now is the time. In spite of the wrong note, I love you. My heart is innocent, and this the first and last day of the world. The birds twitter now anew, but a design surmounts their twittering. It is the design of a man that makes them twitter. It is a design.
Thank you very much, Dr. Williams. It was wonderful meeting you this afternoon. And so, Anthology number 5. Our thanks to Tony Schwartz and Dr. William Carlos Williams for being with us this afternoon. Anthology comes to you with the cooperation of the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA, Lexington Avenue and 92nd Street in Manhattan. The program is produced by Steve White, written and directed by Draper Lewis for WNBC. Until next Sunday at 3, when we'll meet Norman Rose and listen to a scene from Medea starring Judith Anderson, this is Fleetwood saying goodbye and good readings.